Welcome to this deep dive on opportunistic sensing. We're going to be looking at some research you provided about a new way of recognizing activity and context. And get this, it doesn't rely on preset sensor setups.
Uh-huh.
It uses whatever sensors happen to be around.
Yeah, that's right.
That could be your phone, your smartwatch, even sensors in smart buildings.
It's a big shift. We've been so used to deploying sensors for specific applications. This is suggesting something different. A future where your surroundings adapt to you instead of the other way around.
Okay, so how does that even work? The research brings up a big challenge. How do we create systems that are smart enough to deal with unpredictable sensor combinations? Because in the real world, the types and locations of sensors are constantly changing.
Exactly. And that's where abstract recognition goals come in. We need to move away from programming very specific tasks. We need systems that can grasp and achieve broader objectives.
Okay, so instead of saying detect when someone picks up a hammer, we're saying something more general.
Right, more like detect grasping manipulative activities. The research uses that phrase as an example. And it could be in a warehouse setting, let's say. Now, the system, it needs to figure out on its own which sensors to use. Maybe wearables on the workers or cameras in the warehouse.
So we're giving the system a goal. And it has to figure out the best way to use the tools it has to achieve that goal.
Precisely.
What about inconsistencies in sensor placement and orientation?
Yeah.
I mean, your smartphone doesn't just stay perfectly still in your pocket, does it?
It doesn't, no. And you've hit on a critical point. Signal conditioning and sensor-independent features are extremely important here.
Okay.
First, let's talk about signal conditioning. This is about making the sensor data, well, cleaner, less affected by variations.
Okay.
For instance, you can use acceleration magnitude from a three-axis accelerometer. Think about it, no matter how the sensor is oriented, the acceleration magnitude stays the same.
So instead of using raw data that might be all over the place,
we're
pulling out information that's consistent and actually means something.
Exactly. Then there are sensor-independent features. Let's say we want to recognize hand gestures. Now, the research suggests we could use data from inertial sensors on the wrist or from visual tracking with a camera. Either one could work.
So the system can adapt to different kinds of sensor data. It's not limited to just one specific sensor for a task.
Exactly. And that's really the core of opportunistic sensing. Think of it as a lookup table. The system maps common recognition problems with potential sensor combinations and algorithms. So based on what's available and the problem at hand, it can choose the right tools for the job.
All right, so we've got this system, and it can handle a dynamic sensor environment. It can pull out meaningful data even with variations, and it can even decide which sensors to use. But what happens when the environment changes significantly? What if sensors break down or we add new ones?
Now, that is where this research gets really interesting. It proposes a system that can evolve and adapt on its own. And it does this by using the correlation between sensor data.
Hold on. How does it learn from these correlations?
Let me explain. When two sensors constantly show signals that are correlated, it suggests they are measuring the same thing, or at least very similar things, from roughly the same location. And the longer this correlation goes on, the stronger that probability becomes.
So the system starts to understand that even if the sensors are different, the information they're giving might be related to the same activity or context.
Precisely. And that ability is what allows for this impressive adaptation. The research talks about a system that maintained a high level of accuracy even after multiple sensor replacements. It shows just how resilient the system can be to a changing sensing environment.
That's incredible. But what happens if you introduce a brand new sensor, especially one that doesn't describe itself very well? How does that integrate?
That is an excellent question. They focused on that, actually. Specifically, the most challenging situation where a new sensor is added, but it has limited self-description.
So it can't tell the system, hey, I'm a temperature sensor, or I'm designed to detect motion.
That's right. And that's where the existing system's ability to recognize context is really valuable. It uses its existing knowledge to establish a ground truth, so to speak, and then it can train a classifier specifically for that new sensor.
So the established sensors act as guides, almost like mentors for the new sensor.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. They even found that with this approach, as long as you have three or more sensors in the ensemble, the system maintains remarkably high accuracy. Even after numerous sensor swaps.
This is pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah.
But sensors themselves change over time, right?
Right.
I mean, they degrade, their readings might become less accurate. How does the system deal with that gradual shift in sensor data?
It has to, and this is what the research refers to as concept drift. Essentially, how a sensor represents a certain activity or context can change over time.
So what used to be a clear walking signal for a well-calibrated accelerometer might not be so clear as the sensor gets older.
Exactly. And the research looks at autonomous classifier adaptation as a way to address this. One simple example involves something called a nearest class center classifier.
Could you explain that for those of us who aren't as familiar with all the machine learning terms?
Of course. Basically, it's a way to classify data points. It assigns them to the class whose center is closest to them in a multidimensional feature space. Imagine it like grouping stars on a star chart based on how close they are to predefined constellation centers.
Okay, so if a data point, which represents a sensor reading, is closer to the walking cluster on our star chart, the system says, okay, that activity is walking.
Exactly. Now think about this. In terms of autonomous classifier adaptation, that walking cluster center might start to shift on our star chart.
Because of that sensor drift we were talking about.
Right. That means the initial walking readings, the ones that were well calibrated, might end up further away from the center of the walking cluster as the sensor changes. And that could lead to the system misclassifying the activity.
I see. It might not recognize walking as accurately anymore.
Exactly. That's where adaptation comes in. The system can actually detect this drift by keeping an eye on how accurate its classifications are. If it notices the accuracy dropping, it can adjust the center of the cluster.
To match the new sensor readings, even though they've drifted a bit, it's like those constellation centers on our star chart can move to better represent the data.
A great analogy. The research found that even with just a small improvement over random chance in the initial true positive rate, the chances of successfully adapting the classifier are really high. The classifiers that did adapt well ultimately achieved very good accuracy.
So the system isn't just learning based on what sensors are available, but also how those sensors themselves are changing over time. Amazing. With all this talk about classifiers and adaptation, is there a way for a user to give feedback to the system directly? Or is this all happening behind the scenes, so to speak?
The researchers did look at that, and it takes us to this really interesting idea of opportunistic user feedback.
Opportunistic user feedback. Does that mean the system isn't getting direct commands? But instead, it's learning from subtler cues.
Yes, exactly. Imagine a user is interacting with their environment. Now, let's say the system misunderstands an action or makes the wrong guess about what the user needs. The user's next actions, even just a sign of frustration, can give the system really valuable feedback.
It's as if the system can pick up on our nonverbal cues, kind of like how we do in social situations.
It's an interesting comparison. The research even looks at even more subtle feedback mechanisms, like using brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs, to detect error-related brainwave patterns.
So the system could tell when a user recognizes an error, even if they don't say or do anything.
Exactly. It's a fascinating area of research. Imagine systems that are so in tune with our cognitive states that they can correct themselves based on how our brains react. This idea of using error-related EEG correlates, as they call it, could be a big step towards truly adaptive and self-improving systems.
The research focuses mainly on recognizing pretty straightforward activities and contexts. Things like presence, location, how someone's moving, hand gestures. Can this kind of opportunistic sensing really work in more complex real-world situations?
That's the key question, and the researchers acknowledge that challenge. They propose a building block approach, starting with these simpler primitives and then combining them into more complex activities.
So instead of trying to recognize cooking all at once, the system would first identify the individual actions involved, like chopping vegetables, stirring, checking the oven. And by putting those pieces together, it could gradually understand more complex activities.
That's the idea. And the research even looks at how these building blocks could be used for things like indoor activity monitoring or even lifestyle monitoring.
You could see how this would be helpful in elder care. A system like this could keep track of daily activities and maybe even spot signs of distress.
That's a great point. And the research actually highlights a really interesting testbed for this technology, brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs.
We talked about BCIs earlier in terms of user feedback. How would they be a test case for opportunistic sensing itself?
Well, EEG-based BCIs rely on interpreting brainwave patterns, but they are very susceptible to noise and variations in electrode contact. Think about how much our heads move throughout the day. Even slight movements can introduce errors into those brainwave readings.
I see. So the researchers saw an opportunity to apply opportunistic sensing in this context.
Exactly. They hypothesized that using things like signal conditioning, sensor-independent features, and adaptation, they could make BCIs much more robust and reliable.
So instead of relying on a fixed set of electrodes that might not always make good contact, the system could learn to interpret data from different electrode locations. It could adapt to changes in head position or electrode performance.
Yes, and if this approach works for something as complex and sensitive as interpreting brainwaves, it really opens up a lot of possibilities for other areas.
It's a high-stakes proof of concept, for sure. If it can work with brainwaves, imagine what else it could do.
It really underscores a key point from this research. We're moving towards a fundamental shift in how we interact with technology. Opportunistic sensing has the potential to free us from rigid sensor setups and usher in an era of truly adaptive and intelligent environments.
So we're talking about a future where technology fades into the background, and we can just focus on our goals, our intentions. We tell the system what we want, and it figures out the best way to get it done using whatever's available.
Right. And the research actually goes into some specific efforts to develop practical building blocks for opportunistic activity recognition. One thing they looked at was how to determine where a wearable device is located on the body.
Which makes sense, because a sensor on your wrist is going to give you different information than a sensor in your pocket, even if you're measuring the same thing.
Precisely. And they actually had some pretty good results. Using just accelerometer data from a single device, they were able to reliably tell the difference between 5 on-body locations.
Really?
The head, wrist, torso, front pocket, and back pocket.
Wow. So even without GPS or anything, the system could figure out where the sensor was based on how the person was moving.
Exactly. And that kind of location awareness opens up even more possibilities for accurate activity recognition. The system knows whether the data is coming from the head, the wrist, etc., and it can use that context.
It's like giving the system another piece of the puzzle to work with.
Yeah.
What about the problem of sensors shifting around within a location? Did they address that at all?
They did, and they came up with a really interesting approach using heuristics based on biomechanics.
Biomechanics. So they're actually using our understanding of human movement to make the system more accurate.
Yeah, they realized that even if a sensor moves around a little, certain movement patterns are characteristic of specific body parts. By building that kind of biomechanical knowledge into the algorithms, they were able to make the system a lot more robust to sensor displacement.
So even if the sensor isn't perfectly placed, the system can still make a good guess about what the user is doing just based on how humans move. That's pretty clever. We've been talking mostly about sensors on the body, but what about objects in the environment? Could this system work with those too?
The research touches on that as well. Specifically, they looked at a method for figuring out an object's location using just accelerometers and microphones.
Sensors that are already found in most smart devices.
Exactly. No need for specialized tracking tags or anything. They tested this method where objects emit a sound signal, kind of like a beep, and the system uses the reflected sound patterns to figure out where the object is.
So it's like echolocation, like bats or dolphins use.
Exactly. And they found it to be surprisingly accurate. In their tests, they were able to pinpoint specific locations within rooms.
That opens up some really interesting possibilities. Imagine a smart home that not only knows what you're doing, but also where you left your keys.
It's a compelling vision, and I think this research gives us a glimpse into how that kind of future might actually be possible. And the really exciting part is, this is still early days. Opportunistic sensing is just getting started.
It sounds like we're at the edge of a whole new frontier, and like any new frontier, there are going to be challenges, and we need to be mindful of the ethical implications as well.
You're absolutely right. As we move towards a world where we're relying more and more on opportunistic sensing, we have to think about privacy, data security, and the potential for bias in these systems. Mm-hmm. It's crucial to make sure that these technologies are developed and used responsibly. But the potential benefits here are just too significant to ignore.
We really are talking about a whole new way of interacting with technology. A future where our environments adapt to us, not the other way around. And that means we can focus on what matters most to us, knowing that technology is there to make our lives easier, safer, and more fulfilling. That's a future worth striving for.
I completely agree.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of opportunistic sensing. We've seen how it has the potential to completely change how we live, work, and interact with the world around us. If you'd like to learn more, be sure to check out the research we discussed. You'll find links to the source material in our show notes.
And we'd love to hear your thoughts. What aspects of your life would you trust to an opportunistic system? What opportunities and concerns do you see? Join the conversation on our social media channels, and let's explore the future of pervasive computing together.
Until next time. Keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.